estimation, and a particular parameter estimation using Bayesian inference techniques. So this talk is actually being given on behalf of a larger group of people that are involved in doing parameter estimation on Ninja data with several independent codes. So I've split this up into sort of five different groups for five different codes. There is a follow-up Markov chain Monte Carlo code from AI. There is a spinning Markov chain Monte Carlo code, it's called Spin Spiral from Northwestern, a code from Semine and Sankey company, a nested sampling code from Birmingham and Cardiff, and a multi-nest, which is, as I'll mention in a moment, a modification of nested sampling from Cambridge. And the little ninja signs are those groups that have actively participated in the first ninja challenge and are continuing their participation now. And the blue dot is the first non-LIGO-Virgo collaboration group, or at least Aegis is, of course, a member of the collaboration, but at least a number of the people in this group are not members of the collaboration. So it's, I think, exciting to point out that people are participating in the Ninja data analysis, which are not necessarily members of the LIGO-Virgo collaboration. So I won't discuss why we want to do parameter estimation. I think there were already many talks about that, you know, everything from looking for electromagnetic follow-ups and therefore needing to accurately measure sky location to trying to measure the properties of neutron star binaries and eventually their equation of state, as Jocelyn described yesterday. But why do we in particular want to do parameter estimation on Ninja, given that we have, in principle, all of this other data to play with? And there are a few reasons for that, and I think the most important one, at least for me personally, is that we really want to show that we can still accurately carry out parameter estimation using more realistic injections, and given that we're doing this parameter estimation with approximate waveforms. So it's a similar kind of question to the question that LIGO-Virgo data analysts running the standard detection pipelines are trying to answer. They want to know whether we can still make detections of numerical injections, given that our search techniques are not based on numerical waveforms. Now we want to do the same thing for parameter estimation. And I think here the question maybe is even more crucial in some sense, because there is this issue with systematic errors. Namely, even if you have very high signal-to-noise ratio, if you use the wrong waveforms, you will get the parameters incorrectly. And so we want to understand just how badly this will affect us, how incorrectly will we estimate the parameters. And I'll return to this in a moment. And there are a few other things that I think are important as part of this effort. One is actually trying to figure out the appropriate approximate waveform family to use on the fly, given that we have many different approximate waveform families, everything from Taylor T N to or Taylor F, pick your favorite number, waveforms to EOB and R or phenomenological IMR waveforms, spinning waveforms, non-spinning waveforms, etc. We want to figure out which one should we use for a particular injection. We want to do this on the fly, and so for that we need to do model selection, and Bayesian techniques will allow us to do that. And eventually, part of this goal is to test our pipeline of passing triggers from detection searches to parameter estimation efforts, and of course to continue our ongoing efforts to compare and validate parameter estimation codes. So why is this such a difficult problem? Well, there are a few things, and one of the main ones, of course, is that there is this very large parameter space that we have to worry about. There are 9 dimensions for non-spinning binaries, 15 if both components of the binary are spinning, and this doesn't even include eccentricity. We want to coherently analyze the data streams from multiple detectors. We want to find a good way to use a priori astrophysical information, if we have this information and we trust it. We want to eventually infer posterior distributions of single parameters. And we have to worry about the fact that the parameter space could be multimodal. Here I'm just plotting one simple and well-known degeneracy. This is the sky map, and this is a marginalized posterior on just the location of the source in the sky. And you can see that there are two big blimps on here. So red means basically the highest posterior values, and then yellow and blue are extended confidence intervals. But you can see that whereas the true location is here, very close to this detected area up at the top, this cross multi-tree location. There's another location that's located antipodally on the opposite side of the sky. Now, this particular degeneracy is well known, but there could also be similar degeneracies due to, let's say, interactions between masses and spins, or luminosity, distance, and inclination. And we have to worry about trying to really understand those kind of degeneracies and to correctly say that when we do make a detection and estimate its parameters, that we are fully aware of the degeneracies that may exist. So the solution to this problem, at least the best solution that I personally know of, is to do Bayesian inference. So you've probably seen Bayes' equation before, but it's basically the idea that the posterior, the probability that you can put on the parameters of the waveforms data, the waveform parameters like masses and spins, given the data and a hypothesis in this case is just a model. So let's say the hypothesis is that there's a signal in the data that is described by an E of B in our waveform. So the posterior on the parameters is the prior, so this is some a priori astrophysical knowledge, multiplied by the likelihood that you would get this data given a particular choice of waveform parameters, divided by the evidence. And if we're computing the posterior and are just interested in the relative values of the posterior at different parameter values, then we can essentially ignore this evidence term because it's independent of the values of the parameter, so it will cancel out in the ratio. Now, the likelihood is just a statement about how likely it is that given a waveform, we would get a particular stretch of data, and that's just a statement about the noise in the data. So not too surprisingly, data minus waveform is our estimate of the noise, and this is just essentially a weighted chi-squared or residuals fit. And the evidence is, of course, just the total probability of getting the data, and that is the marginalized likelihood integral over all of the possible parameters, and this is actually a very useful quantity because this is what will allow us to compare multiple different models. Okay. So let me mention two main approaches that people are using to carry out parameter estimation. One is Markov chain Monte Carlo. So Markov chain Monte Carlo is a stochastic way of sampling the multidimensional parameter space. You have to do it stochastically because if you have a 15-dimensional parameter space, you can't conceivably do this with a fixed template bank. Instead, you have to preferentially pick points in parameter space where the fit is best. It is designed for evaluating the posterior probability distribution functions, but can also be used to compute evidence for model selection. And the idea is that you sample the posterior, as I said, accepting or rejecting new samples based on the Metropolis-Hastings ratio, which basically is a ratio of the prior times posterior for the posterior for the new and the old sample with appropriate weighting for the jump proposal distribution. Why do we need three different MCMC codes, or how are they actually different? Well, there are several variations you can do. So one of the most important ones is you can actually have different jump proposal distributions, and that's a key thing in MCMC searches. But you can also do various clever tricks like parallel tempering and so on, and the different codes implement different arrays of these clever tricks. Nested sampling is an alternative technique. You are still stochastically sampling the multidimensional parameter space. For nested sampling, you're actually focusing, the original design is to focus on the evidence calculation, but you can also use the samples that you compute in the process of doing the evidence calculation in order to extract the posterior probability density functions. The samples are drawn from a shrinking prior volume where you have n live samples and you repetitively replace the lowest likelihood sample with something at higher likelihood. And again, there are some variations in the selection of that next live point. For example, the standard nested sampling code, INSPNEST, uses a sort of short Markov chain Monte Carlo to pick the next live point, whereas multi-nest uses ellipsoidal clustering, as I'll show in a moment. So here's basically what Marco chain Monte Carlo does. This is just a standard picture. So we have a chain. Here is just, we're just plotting the one parameter, but in general, this chain is traversing multiple parameters. As this chain is moving around the parameter space, it is at every point computing the likelihood. It is deciding whether to accept or reject a jump. And it is, as you can see, generally in general converging on a shape for the likelihood surface, the posterior error probability density function. And here, actually, remarkably, the median happens to be exactly the same as maximum, the true value. That is not at all guaranteed to happen, but this was just sort of a nice, pretty example that VVM had put together. Nested sampling works a little bit differently. The idea is that you, because the primary goal is to evaluate the evidence, you actually take n life points, which you sample from the prior, and then at each iteration, you replace the outermost sample. So you can imagine sort of taking each sample and drawing an isolikelihood contour for that sample, and you take the outermost sample and replace it with some sample at higher likelihood, so something from within the contour, and you do this kind of randomly according to prior volume within the contour. And so the idea is you can associate a given prior volume with each sample, and you're shrinking that prior volume at each iteration by a factor that corresponds to the number of, that is a function of the number of life points. And this allows you to easily compute the marginal likelihood, but you can also resample the samples that you get as a result of this procedure to actually extract your posterior PDFs. And multi-nest is, as I said, a variation on this, where the way that you pick the next sample is that you actually take your existing life points and you sort of subdivide them into multidimensional hyperellipsoids that contain several points, and this allows you to do better mode separation in the sense that if you have sort of two of these structures, like you do over here, at different points in space, you can more easily figure out how to pick your next life point so that you continue to sample both peaks of the PDF, or both modes of the PDF. So now let me say a few words about some preliminary Ninja results, and preliminary is a key word here. The Ninja data set did not come out until a few weeks ago, so, and some of these codes take a little while to run, so not all of them have been able to explore all of the data yet. But let me just give a couple of examples from each of the codes. So Christian Rover was running this follow-up MCAC code, which is this non-spinning binary parameter estimation code. And so you can, he was running it using the phenomenological IMR waveforms. And as you can see, here are, you know, for one particular injection, here are the contours. The blue line is the 95% confidence interval. The red cross are the true values. And so you can see that and the basically, you know, the depth of the color tells you the posterior, and you can see that indeed there is a, you know, the code does a very good job of recovering the input parameters. Here is a run from Spin Spiral. So this is the Northwestern spinning Markov chain Monte Carlo code. So since the spinning code, I specifically plotted the recovered values of the spins. X marks the true value, and here is the posterior. Now, this seems you know, to do quite a good job, although I should give fair warning that so far in this particular run, only one of our chains has converged. And also, it's this, because the actual codes or the actual injections include our numerical injections, they include inspiral merge and ring down, whereas for this particular search, we are using spin Taylor waveforms, so there are waveforms that include spin but don't include the merge and ring down waveforms. We may be biased by the presence of merge and ring down in the data, which we don't expect. We don't sort of account for them in our model, and so it could be that actually this is a fluke that we get this recovery so well. It could just be because the merge and ring down are biasing us towards higher spins. So this is to be confirmed. So some results from nested sampling work done by the Birmingham-Cardiff group. The injection parameters are plotted as green dots over here. And again, as you can see, they are recovered for the individual masses. The sky location Even for the distance, the recovery is quite good. And also, as I mentioned, one of the key features of nested sampling is to get the evidence calculation, and this has been done here. And so this is a base factor, which is basically a statement of the ratio of the evidences for the signal model versus the pure noise model. And so this is actually the log of the base factor. And as you can see, this is quite a significant number, which tells you that there's really very strong preference for having a signal. So in principle, this could also be used as an additional way to gain confidence in making a detection. This has been mislabeled. This should actually say multi-nest rather than insp-nest. These are results from the Cambridge code. Wanted to point, so this is this multi-nest code that I mentioned before, which does this ellipsoidal clustering of points. But the interesting thing that I wanted to point out here is, you know, this degeneracy. So this is the inclination versus distance space. And as you can see, the code does pick up correctly on the fact that there is a degeneracy. So you see this sort of L-shaped feature over here. There's a degeneracy between inclination and distance, and it's not something we can do anything about. It's really there if you have three detectors. Actually, interestingly, it seems that it goes away to a large extent if you have four detectors, which is another argument for having LIGO Australia that Sam had talked about just a little bit earlier. But in this particular case, it seems that the code says that there's actually a greater fraction of the posterior volume is located on this branch of the L, whereas the true injection is actually sitting on the other branch, and this will happen when you have degeneracies. It's an unfortunate fact of life, but it tells you that you have to keep this in mind when you look at these kinds of results. This is, you know, one of the main reasons why you do want to do these Bayesian inference parameter estimation searches. It is that just looking at the highest posterior point, which in this case happens to be here, and let's say carrying out a Fisher matrix type calculation for the error estimates around it, will tell you, okay, this is the true value, and that certainty is this big, right? In fact, the true value is over there, and there is some non-vanishing volume of the posterior, non-vanishing fraction of the posterior on this other branch, and so you need these kinds of searches in order to correctly make an astrophysical statement about what you really know from the data, what you can really infer from the data. And the last bit that I wanted to mention, returning to the earlier issue of systematic errors, is the fact that if you don't use accurate waveforms, you can actually be significantly misled, because it is possible for statistical errors due to the uncertainties due to the noise, to be much smaller than your systematic errors. So here are two examples from two different completely independent codes. This is the spin spiral code, which now, you know, has 20 chains having converged. So unlike the previous run, which I showed you before, and the spinning searches, which are harder, here I'm very confident that this code has extracted really the correct PDF. And here we have the insp-nest code. They both use inspiral only waveforms. Here it's the Taylor T2 waveform. Here it's the Taylor F2 waveform. The SNR is 70, so we should do very accurate parameter estimation. And in fact, we do. You can see that the this should say M, not log M. But you can see that the mass is known to something like less than 0.01 solar masses, which is fantastic, except that, you know, you don't see this green dot, which tells you what the right value is. And the reason is that the green dot is actually somewhere out in the train tracks on this sort of a scale. And the reason is that the green dot is that, you know, this is at 4.46. The green dot is at 4.66 solar masses. And the reason is that the actual waveform, of course, had a merger and rig down on it, and our templates did not. And so we were extremely biased in our parameter estimates, much more so than the statistical errors would indicate, by the fact that we used the wrong waveform family. And so this is a serious concern, and this is actually one of the main reasons, I think, why we need to understand what can we really do with these numerical injections and how they will influence parameter estimation. So more on this in the future as we have more runs, more results, and more model selection comparisons. So the actual mass, so this is a mass ratio of 0.25. So the eta is 0.25 here, and the chirp mass is 4.66. So they're equal mass sources with, you know, so this is from the low mass search, and the total each mass is probably like 6 solar masses or something like that. I don't remember the exact value. I mean, you can reconstruct it from chirp mass and eta.
Time for a question? Go ahead.
So we have run it on actual glitches from LIGO S5 data, it is possible to get certainly, you know, because our noise model is just a Gaussian noise model, right? That's what we're comparing with. It is certainly possible that you can get, you know, base vectors that are significantly higher than one when you have a glitch. There, it is typically still not near, as high as the base vectors that you actually get on a genuine signal. You also see in your parameter estimates are actually the posterior PDFs. The posterior PDFs look nothing like what you would expect from a real signal. So, for example, if you have 3 detectors, you expect that you should have at most 2 points in the sky, or 2 blobs in the sky, if it's a real signal. Whereas if it's not, you get some very strange shape that takes up, you know, most of your sky area, for example, in your posterior. So things do not converge in the same way. So there are ways to tell them apart. But this is still an ongoing effort. How accurately could you really use these as, you know, additional vetoes or additional confidence-building measures for detection?
Have enough trials been done by now to tell whether or not the 95% confidence interval contains the injection 95% of the time?
That's a very good question. That's something actually we are in the process of doing right now. So as you said, it requires building up quite a bit of data, because on any one given run, right, it's perfectly reasonable if your true value lies outside of your 95% confidence interval. It will do that 5% of the time, and you might just get unlucky. So you really need to have enough statistics to do that. And I think we have finally built up enough statistics. And so this is something that we should have the answer to hopefully by the end of the summer.
A question to the audience. We're by now about 10 minutes late. Do you want to leave on time, or do you want to have time for discussions? No answer. I assume you want the discussion, because that's what you're here for, the conference. So are there more questions? Thank you again.